assembly. All glories to the assembly. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I am your substitute teacher. I was called this morning to give class. The devotee who was going to give class is not feeling well. I'm a substitute teacher for the devotee. I don't know who is supposed to give class, but he's not feeling well, so yeah. Okay. Reading from fourth canto, text chapter 31, text 21. Na bhajati kumani shinam sa ijam hare adanatma dhana kriyo rasagya shruti excuse me shruta Dhana Kula Kumanam Madhaya Ye Vidhadhati Papam Akinchaneshu Satsu Navajati Kumani Shinam Saijam Kumanani Shinam Hare Dhanatma Dhana Priyora Sagya Shruta Dhana Kula Kamanam Madarye Dhana Kula Kamanam Madarye Vidhadati Papama Kinshaneshu Satsu Bhajati Kumani Shinam Saijam Hare Ratanatma Dana Prior Sagya Sagya Sru Shuta Dana Kula Karmanam Madaye Adhati papama kinshaneshu satsu Nubhajati kumanishinam saijam Adhati kumanishinam Hariradam natmadana priyora sagyaha Shruta dana kula karmanam madarye Vidhadhari papam kinshaneshu satsu ladies. Word meanings? Na.
No.
Never. Bhajati. Accepts. Kumanishinam. Of persons with a dirty heart. Saha. He. Ijam. Offering. Hari. The Supreme Lord. Adana. To those who have no material possessions. Atmadhana. Simply dependent on the Lord. Priyaha. Who is dear. Rasagyaha. Who accepts the essence of life. Shruta. Education. Dana. Wealth. Kula. Aristocracy. Karmanam. And of fruitive activities. Vadai. By pride. Yea. All those who. Vidadhati. Perform. Papam. Disgrace. Akinchaneshu. Without material possessions. Satsu. Unto the devotees. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions, but are fully happy in possessing the devotional service of the Lord. Indeed, the Lord relishes the devotional service, the devotional activities of such devotees. Those who are puffed up with material, education, wealth, aristocracy, and fruitive activity are very proud of possessing material things, and they often deride the devotees. Even if such people offer the Lord worship, the Lord never accepts them. Let's repeat that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions, but are fully happy in possessing the devotional service of the Lord. Indeed, the Lord relishes the devotional activities of such devotees. Those who are puffed up with material education, wealth, aristocracy, and fruitive activity are very proud of possessing material things, and they often deride the devotees. Even if such people offer the Lord worship, the Lord never accepts them. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is dependent on his pure devotees. He does not even accept the offerings of those who are not devotees. A pure devotee is one who feels he does not possess anything material. A devotee is always happy in possessing the devotional service of the Lord. Devotees may sometimes appear materially poor, but because they are spiritually advanced and enriched, they are most dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such devotees are free from attachment to family, society, friendship, children, and so on. They abandon affection for all these material possessions and are always happy in possessing the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead understands the position of his devotee. If a person derides a pure devotee, he is never recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, the Supreme Lord never excuses one who offends a pure devotee. There are many examples of this in history. A great mystic yogi, Durvasa Muni, offended the great devotee Ambarish Maharaj. The great sage Durvasa was to be chastised by the Sudarshan Chakra of the Lord. Even though the great mystic directly approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was never excused. Those on the path of liberation should be very careful not to offend a pure devotee. Hare Krishna. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāi. Om jñāna timirandasya gyanam jana shalakaya chakshuru miritam yena tasmai śrī gurave namaha mukam karoti vācalam pungam vakayate girim yakrapāta maham vande śrī guru dinatharinam manchakāpatrubhyascha kripasindubhye vachā patitānam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. This verse is interesting because it's contrasting those who feel themselves helpless, the akinchana, the devotee, with those who are proud of what they possess. It's complete opposite. Now, a devotee may possess so many good qualities, but the devotee feels, I am nothing, I have nothing. That was always Prabhupada's attitude. I am unqualified. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said something quite amazing. He said that the only way we can ever come to appreciate the devotee is to think, I have no qualification for devotional service. So he said, in that consciousness, then you appreciate the devotee. And he was speaking to the devotees, not even the materialists. To the devotee, he said, when the devotee feels, I am completely unqualified for bhakti, I am completely unworthy of any mercy, I am without qualification. He said, in that consciousness, only at that time, in that consciousness, can one appreciate the other devotees. So that means whenever we're not appreciating, we're not in that consciousness. We're in the consciousness what? I'm special. We're in the consciousness that's described here. What? I have education. That means I'm smart. I was born in a good family, or a wealthy family, or I have beauty. And then possessing these things, we think, well, I'm in some way distinguished from others. So in some way I'm better. At that point, one cannot appreciate the devotees. But what's described here is if you take it one stage further, not only do you not appreciate, but what do? You put yourself above. And when you put yourself above, what happens? It's only from the above position that we commit aparad. You don't commit aparad from the lower position. You don't commit aparad from the position of thinking, I have no qualification for devotional service. That's not the platform. the platform to commit aparad is that I think I have some qualification, and in many cases it's I think that I have intelligence. I know better. So now I can judge. And then when I make that judgment, therefore now I can no longer appreciate the lotus feet of devotees. I can only judge them. And then I commit fault. I fault them, and then worse, I commit aparad. So one of the interesting things, at least I find interesting in the life of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is that, I think I may have mentioned this before, is that he was extremely reluctant to give any credence to any of the faults that other devotees would bring up about fellow god brothers and sisters. He was reluctant to engage in any conversation, but rather he would, his general policy was just put a stop to it. He would stop them. Now the interesting thing is, he would stop them even if what they said was true. And he taught something extremely, he taught something incredible. There was one time, some devotees weren't chanting their rounds. So they came to him to complain. These are initiated devotees, so that's a valid complaint, isn't it? So-and-so is not chanting their rounds. The initiated devotee, concern. They came to him. And because in the role of acharya, he wanted to teach how to appreciate other devotees, even the devotees that had a fault, in this case the fault of not chanting their rounds, he made an amazing statement. These devotees who were not chanting were living in the mat. That means they were engaged in service. So they were engaged all day, but they weren't chanting their rounds. Of course, I don't know in those days if not chanting your rounds meant you were only chanting 53 rounds instead of 64. But I think, as far as I understand this story, they weren't chanting any rounds. They were too busy or whatever. Whatever the reason. So to teach the importance of appreciating devotees, and my realization is, as I said, if we don't learn to appreciate, we're going to tend to offend them because we have that tendency. He made an amazing statement. He said, just see how great these devotees are. They're not chanting their rounds, and he said, just see how great they are. Why did he say that? Anybody know? Why did he say how? This is, they're great. Who knows why? I'll give you a hint. I said that they were engaged all day in service, but they weren't chanting their rounds. So why did he say they were great? That's the hint, that they were engaged all day. He said, if I weren't chanting my rounds, I would be in Maya. I would not be engaged. But just see how glorious these devotees are. They have so much bhakti, their bhakti is so overflowing that even though they're not chanting their rounds, they're still engaged in service. So he turned it completely around. Isn't that amazing? He turned it completely around. It was a valid concern. They're not chanting their rounds. But he didn't deal with that concern because he wanted to teach a principle. And the principle is, if you don't appreciate devotees, you're going to be in trouble. Because there will be the tendency to fault find. And you can only appreciate the devotee from the lower position. So he took the lower position. How did he take the lower position? He said, just see, they're in a higher position than I am. I am in a lower position. I'm chanting my rounds, but I'm in a lower position because if I were not chanting, I would fall down. And they're not even chanting, and they're engaged in service. Amazing, isn't it? Amazing lesson. we have a problem. And it's a very interesting problem. And why it's a problem, why it's interesting, is because what is our problem? What is the problem we're dealing with? We say the problem is that we're dealing with Maya. That's not the problem. Maya is not the problem. Why do I say that? Because Prabhupada said, when you want to be Krishna conscious, when you want to go back to Godhead, Maya helps you. So if Maya helps you, how could Maya be the problem? She's not the problem. Maya has a service, and her service is to keep everyone who is not qualified out of the spiritual world. That's her service, right? To protect Krishna, to protect Braja, to protect the pastimes of Krishna, her service is to keep unqualified people out of those pastimes, right? But her service is to help those who are qualified to go to those pastimes, because Maya is simply the external form. It's just this Maya is Radharani expanded. Yoga Maya, Mahamaya, it's an expansion, right? So Maya's service is to help us. So what's the problem then? The problem is, as soon as we have any desire which is not aligned with Krishna, Maya shows up and expands that within our heart and facilitates that. That's the problem. And as soon as there is no desire for anything other than Krishna, then she comes to facilitate that. Right? So the only problem, therefore, is not Maya. The problem is we're calling and asking Maya to facilitate us by our consciousness, by the wrong consciousness. So how we think our consciousness is very interesting. If we want, as being shown in this verse, if we want to become proud of any of our qualities, Maya will facilitate that. And in fact, she has been facilitating it for a long time. Many of you have the latest Android or iPhone. Can you calculate how long you've been in the material world on your calculator? Does it have that many zeros in it? One time, they were on a morning walk and they introduced a devotee. They said, Prabhupada, he has a degree in mathematics. How can he use that in Krishna's service? And Prabhupada said, he can calculate how long he's been in the material world. Actually, you can't calculate that number. So, what does this mean? It's very interesting if you think about Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita. And you understand why Krishna is teaching what he is. And how do we understand why? We understand why when we do the calculation of how long we've been in the material world, which is, what, 1 to the zillionth power. We can't calculate the number. There are too many zeros. They'd fill up the whole universe, the zeros of how long we've been here. And then what have we been doing since we've been here? Trying to enjoy, right? And control, right? So what does that mean? That means we are deeply programmed to control and enjoy. Yes? You know when it gets hot and sweaty here? Like at every moment practically? Like every hour you need to drink, right? Every hour we're dying of thirst, isn't it? Especially if you're walking around outside. Definitely within an hour you'll be dying of thirst. Now when you're dying of thirst, do you think about getting a bucket of water and giving out water to everyone that's walking around here? Or do you think where I can get some water or some nimbopani for yourself? What do you think about? I already know the answer. You don't have to tell me. You think about the same thing I think about. How can I get some water? Or if you're a mother you think, how can I get some water for my kid? But it's the same thing, because if your kid is not happy, you're not happy. So it's the same thing. Water for you, water for your kid. It's not a great magnanimous charitable act. If your kid's not happy, they drive you crazy. So you need to keep your kids happy to be happy. That's how we think, right? We think, oh, I wish I had air conditioning in my flat. We don't think, how can I raise funds to get air conditioning in other devotees' flats? Anybody think like that? If you are, I can point you to my flat. I have a room that needs it. We don't think that way. Why don't we think that way? Because we haven't been thinking that way for millions of lifetimes. Right? We are trained. We are very good at it. We do it spontaneously. We do it naturally. That's called conditioning. Right? So why was I mentioning Bhagavad Gita is interesting? Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's doing everything he can to get us to break that pattern. He even says, even if you don't do bhakti, just serve other people. Just stop thinking about yourself. Right? What did Krishna say? If you can't give up the fruits of your activities, do welfare work. But Krishna's going from the lowest denominator. Do welfare work, or do what you like, but give the result to Krishna. Or go higher. Find out what Krishna likes and do it for him. Or go higher. Do it for me out of love. But at least stop doing it for yourself. So what's the problem? The problem is we feed into Maya by that desire. And Krishna's trying to get us, stop it. Stop the wheel. That's all you're thinking about is yourself, yourself, yourself. Right? And when we're thinking about ourself, what do we think about? What do we tend to think about in terms of ourself? Why are we thinking about ourselves? Because we're the center of the universe. We're special. We have special abilities, intelligence. We're special in some way. So this is ultimately, we can say this is the cause which roots us in the tendency to commit aparadha or to find fault. Because in some way we're thinking the universe evolves around us, in some way we're special. And we feed that into Maya, and then we complain about Maya. You ever complain that Maya is strong? Anyone ever complain? Anyone ever complain, oh, my mind is bothering me? No, the question is, anyone ever not complain? Yes. Okay. I find that to be the funniest thing I've ever heard, complaining about our mind. That's like going to a restaurant, you order this particular rice, this particular sabji, this particular dal, this particular roti, this particular sweet, and they bring it to you, and then you complain, why did you bring that to me? It's not healthy. We program our mind from time immemorial. I'm the best. I am number one. I am the enjoyer. I am the supreme. So then we feed that programming into Maya, who reciprocates with us to help us facilitate that. And then we complain about our mind. Who programmed the mind that way? We did. So what are we complaining about? Oh, Prabhu, my mind. Oh, Prabhu, my mind's so offensive. Oh, your mind just fell out of the universe and happened to become offensive? Who programmed it to be offensive? The same person that thinks, I'm so intelligent. I was born in a good family. I've got a lot of money in the bank. That same person that's thinking like that is programming it. And so then that becomes the cause. Now, it gets really interesting. Janmaishraya Shruti Svibhira Edamana Madapuman Naivaharti Abhidatam Boy Tomba Kinchina Gochunam. Queen Kunti says, if you have any estimation of your own sense of material value, then you cannot say the name with feeling. If you have any sense of pride in your position and any sense of wanting to expand that pride, you can't have feeling. And bhakti is about feeling. That's all it's about. It's about nothing else but feeling. In that purport there, Prabhupada said, it's all about feeling. Right there in the purport to that verse. It's all about feeling. So, how much feeling can I have in executing devotional service if I think I'm special? And now, what makes it even worse is Krishna saying, you know, people who think they're special, they offer me things, I won't even take it. Here, I don't want it. Amazing, right? Sometimes I think when I'm chanting, if I commit aparad, Krishna doesn't want that. Does he want 16 rounds of aparad? Is that what Krishna wants to hear? When you make your vows to your guru at initiation, you say, I will chant. How many rounds will you chant? I will chant 16. 16, what kind of rounds will you chant? Oh, I'll just chant 16. No, it's not like that. Does Krishna want to hear 16 rounds of aparad? He wants to hear 16 rounds with some feeling, right? Isn't it? In fact, there's a very interesting story that I would like to tell that shows how the consciousness is what determines the power of the action, not the action itself. Even if you say something nice about a devotee, but you don't mean it, what you mean is what is communicated, and that's offensive. Mahaprabhu, when he took sannyas, the night before he had a dream, a shocking dream, and in the dream, the Diksha mantra for sannyas came to him, and he became very concerned about this mantra because the mantra was tattvamasi. Who knows what that means? Tattvamasi. That's the mantra of the Mayavadis. You are that. You are him. So he said, oh no, I'm going to get this mantra from Kesha Bharati, the impersonal Mayavad mantra. I am him. I am that. Tattvamasi. What to do? So he consulted, and does anyone know the story who he consulted with? One, he consulted with another devotee. Maybe his spiritual, maybe might have been Dupuri, I'm not sure. Do you know? Anybody know who he consulted with? He consulted, and he said, no, it's okay. For Vaishnavas, it means you are his, or I am his. For Vaishnavas, Tattvamasi is I am his. So then Mahaprabhu was relieved because he thought he'll be initiated with a Mayavad mantra, right? So what did Mahaprabhu do? When Kesha Bharati came to initiate him, he said, Maharaj, I had a dream last night that you were going to give me this mantra, Tattvamasi. And then he said Tattvamasi in his ear, like sometimes you tell somebody, can you say, where was I? I was in the South Africa airport and I got my luggage wrapped and we were talking to a man, he was a Rasta or a Muslim or something. And I said, can you say Hare Krishna? And he said, no, I can't say Hare Krishna. I said, oh, you just said it, and then he laughed. So Mahaprabhu said, are you going to tell me this mantra, Tattvamasi? And Kesha Bharati said, yes. So what happened? Mahaprabhu, when he said it with the conception that I am yours, he initiated Kesha Bharati. So Kesha Bharati now became a Vaishnava. The same mantra. And then Kesha Bharati gave the mantra, and then Mahaprabhu was initiated with a Vaishnava mantra. But it was the same sound. So the same sound with a different consciousness, everything's different. isn't it? So, the same, I love you, Prabhu, I appreciate you so much, and then you go and tell somebody what a jerk they are, because that's what you really mean. That's not what it's about. Yes, yes, he's a nice devotee, but in your mind you're thinking, but I'm a better devotee. Or I'm just as good. No, that's not what it works. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But the attitude with which we chant, the feeling, that's everything, right? So, it's very interesting. There's a purport, I believe it's in the fifth canto, very interesting purport, where Prabhupada outlines the practices of bhakti, and then he ends it. He said, if you do this, 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 and this, and then he says, and you have to avoid one thing that would undo the this, 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 and this that he described before. Who knows what that one thing Prabhupada says you have to avoid? Very interesting purport. You have to do chant Hare Krishna, associate with devotees, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, serve the spiritual medical, etc., etc., and avoid. What is it? What is that one thing to avoid? Yeah, offending devotees. I thought the Chinese were going to say avoid eating insects. No. Actually, sometimes I ride my scooter on the road when all the bugs are coming. If you don't keep your mouth closed, then you break one of the regular principles. They'll fly in your mouth, the insects. So he says you must do this, 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 and this, and avoid offending devotees. In other words, offending devotees will undo everything. But the point of this class, what I'm trying to say, I hope I communicated, it's not enough not to offend devotees. It's the mentality that causes the offense that we need to work on. Right? And that's what's being described here, that I think I'm somewhat important. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is teaching us, until you think you're unqualified to serve Krishna, you could never appreciate the devotees. And how important is it to appreciate devotees? It's an essential act. It's essential for our bhakti. And also, based on this, we can understand if we're not appreciating, and particularly if we tend to find fault, then there's something wrong with the way we're thinking. And that's how we know. We can monitor that. Now, devotee might say, but Prabhu, I'm not a pure devotee. So, how do you expect me to be on this very elevated platform? It's a good excuse, but don't use it. At least don't use it against the Yamaraj, the Yamadutas, when they come. If the Yamadutas happen to come for you, because you forgot to put your neck beads on that morning, or whatever, don't use the excuse, well, I couldn't do it because I'm not a pure devotee. Well, the Yamadutas said, but you know, you're offending this devotee. He said, well, what do you expect? I'm not a pure devotee. If you study Prabhupada's teachings very carefully, you will realize Prabhupada expected a lot from us. Didn't he? He expected a lot from us. 1969, he was already preaching to the devotees about becoming guru. Did you know that? 1969. Wow. Average age of the devotees in ISKCON in 1969 was 20. Average time spent in the movement, I would estimate, less than 1 year. And Srila Prabhupada is preaching about becoming guru. Guru means one who not only perfectly repeats, but perfectly follows his guru. Prabhupada was expecting 20-year-old devotees, not even in the movement 1 year, to perfectly follow. He said by 1975, 6 years later. So that means they would be 25 years old, 5 years in the movement, 6 years in the movement. That was his hope. The Prabhupada had very high expectations for us. So, the idea I'm not a pure devotee, that's okay. But I think the way we have to understand this is just like it said, in front of the guru, you should feel yourself a fool, but you shouldn't act yourself a fool. You shouldn't act like a fool. So in the same way, I'm not a pure devotee, but we're meant to act as pure devotees. Now, the question is, how can you act as a pure devotee when you're not a pure devotee? Prabhupada Kanishta. Okay, but don't act like one. He said, well, how can I not act like one? No, I'm a Kanishta. That's okay, but don't act like a Kanishta. Prabhupada had a devotee. She maybe was 1 or 2 years in the movement, and she was the main pujari in Los Angeles. In those days, every devotee would go out on Sankirtan, Harinam Sankirtan, and two people would stay back, one pujari and one cook. Even the president went out. Everybody, the temple was empty. All the devotees were on the street. If you're wondering how Krishna consciousness spread so quickly around the world, that's how. Every devotee in the temple was out all day, and they came back in the evening, and they went back all day, and they went back in the evening. And only two devotees stayed back. And so she had such love and devotion for the deities. Prabhupada said she had bhava. Think, how can a devotee, 2 years in the movement, have bhava? Bhava means attachment. Bhava means ecstasy. Prabhupada did not mean a two-year devotee could be on the stage of bhava. He just meant she had bhava. She had attachment and emotion for the deity. Didn't mean she was on the stage of bhava, which is one stage away from love. It's a very elevated stage, right? It takes a long time. It takes more than 2 years. So the same way you say, Prabhu, I'm a Kanishta, will act on the platform of Madhyam, which is serve Krishna purely. Even you're a Kanishta, you can act on the Madhyam platform, even if you're not on it, at least act on it. That's what Prabhupada expected. How do we know that? He told us, serve without any ambition. So, what is essential to act on the Madhyam platform, even if you're not on it? What is essential is sincerity. Because what does sincerity mean? If you analyze what sincerity means, I will serve for one reason, to please Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas. That's why I serve. That's the meaning of sincerity. And therefore, Krishna says, Nahi Kalyana Krit. If you do Kalyana, auspicious activity, which has also been translated as being sincere, if you're sincere, Nahi Kalyana Krit Kaschit, Durgatim Tatta Gacchati, then there'll be no obstacle. So what does that mean? Well, one devotee nicely said, a nice mantra, which would be nice to have a t-shirt. He said, if you're not paying attention, pay attention, because this is a good one. He said, sincerity is invincible. Sincerity is invincible. What does that mean? That means through sincerity, we will achieve Krishna consciousness. Because sincerity for us in a neophyte stage is synonymous with purity. And it's by sincerity that we come to that Madhyam platform of purity, where our motive is pure. Does that make sense? And it is by sincerity that we will come to understand our position, which is down here, not up here. And in that position, we're safe. So, the moral of the story is, if you're finding fault, it's not because you're better than others, which is what we think, right? Isn't it? I mean, why would you find fault if you thought you were worse? You find fault because you think you're better. I know, I have insight. They don't understand this. Therefore, I'm more intelligent. I understand things better. Finding fault is not a symptom of being smarter or knowing things. It's a symptom of pride. That's how we have to think. And when we have the ability to appreciate that, it means, yes, now I'm in the right consciousness. Now we have a little time for questions. I have a question here. If you have a question, we can also take it. If Maya is an expansion of Radharani, and as per my knowledge, Draupadi was Maya incarnate, so Draupadi was Radharani's avatar, or am I totally off base here? Well, she expands in different ways, and she has different functions in her different expansions. So she expands all the way out to her Bhadrakali and Durga and like that. But particularly Mahamaya, in her function in this world, her service is what? To keep you out of Krishna's party. That's her program. Just like maybe you're having a party and you know so-and-so who was not invited is going to come and you don't want so-and-so, so you get a bouncer. You know what a bouncer is? If you don't know what a bouncer is, Gauranga Singha, he's a bouncer. You know Gauranga Singha? Somebody big with big muscles stands outside the door, and if you're not, and when the person comes is not allowed, you tell them, you're not allowed. It's called the bouncer. So Maya is Krishna's bouncer. But how does she bounce? Very simply, she just fulfills your, she feeds into what you want. That's all she's doing. It's just feeding into your own material desire. And when you no longer want it, then she helps you. I said, oh, okay, you want to go to Krishna. You're qualified to go in the party. Why would she keep you out of the party if you're qualified? That's not Krishna's goal. Krishna's goal is that Maya's there. She fulfills your desire. Why? So you get so completely frustrated that you just realize this is stupid. And you reform yourself. And then when you reform yourself, she says, okay, you can go to the party now. But until you reform yourself, you're not allowed. So she's Krishna's bouncer. And we're the ones who are self-bouncing. We're bouncing ourselves out. It's that simple. So don't blame your mind. Don't blame Maya. Blame your own lack of sincerity. That's all. That's all it is. Nahi kalyana kutkashya durgatin tatta gacchati. Sincerity is invincible. If we're sincere, if we're pure in our motive, Maya will just carry us back. That's how it works. Oh, Prabhu, my mind. Try another excuse on me. I don't buy that one. Oh, Prabhu this, oh, Prabhu that. No, no. As long as you say that, Maya will show up and say, yes, Prabhu, you're right. Any other question? Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thanks, Prabhu, for a very nice lecture. Just a question. It is related to this class as well. Like, the karma determines how much the karma of a person determines.
The karma of the person?
Determines, like, what we are going to get in this life and all. So, what about the spiritual life? Is it already predetermined? Like, how much progress a person can make in a particular lifetime? Or is it...
You're saying, just like karma is predicted, is how much you advance in this life predicted?
Yes.
Oh. If I say yes, then what will you do? Relax? I have an interesting, very interesting thing in my life that may answer your question. I was completely material materially exhausted at the age of 17. I was finished with material life at the age of 17. I was a total jnani at the age of 17. I look at the world and go, this is Maya. This is going nowhere. There's nothing. And then by the time I was 19, I was going crazy. I said, I have to find how to get out of material life. I have to find it. Right? Simultaneously, my sister, she has spiritual inclinations and she understands these things. But when she suffers, she doesn't experience it or process it as a jnani. She just processes it as like, well, you just have to have the right attitude and go on and just enjoy and be peaceful. You know, so she's more in the mood of learning how to be happy and peaceful with what you have. And I was more in the mood of, get me out of here. So obviously that had something to do with our past evolvement in spiritual life. But the general answer and the way we understand it from the way Prabhupada preached is do your best in this life and go as far as you possibly can and don't ever think there's any limitation to how far you can go. Because if you do, then you'll just convince yourself. And many devotees do convince themselves. They do. I've actually done a survey. Would you like to hear the results of my survey? I did a survey. Because I became aware that we all have an internal blueprint of how Krishna conscious we think or how Krishna conscious we aspire to be in this lifetime. I wasn't aware of that. I became aware that you may not even be aware of it, but in your own consciousness you're thinking, well, in this lifetime hopefully I could get to Nishta, or you know, I'm definitely going to have to come back, you know, and take birth again because I'm so fallen, or I just can't imagine being Krishna conscious. Everybody had some, I call it a blueprint. Everyone I interviewed had some blueprint. Some blueprints were, I'm going to Braj in this life, my ambition is to become Manjari. You know, some devotees were definitely in, they're already in Braj in their consciousness, so that was their goal. I simply want to be. And some, of course, are more evolved. They actually are very specific about who and what their service they would like to do. And some are, not in this lifetime, Prabhu, no way. Interesting, isn't it? So we have this saying in English, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. What does a self-fulfilling prophecy mean? It means you have an idea, a belief about what's possible or achievable, and it becomes achievable because that's what you believe. So if you're believing, you know, the best I can do in this life, if I'm lucky, is chant 16 rounds offensively and follow the four principles most of the time. That's probably as far as you're going to go. Because that's your ambition, that's your goal. Where Prabhupada, I heard personally time after time after time after time in Prabhupada's classes, I was sitting there, he said, finish up your business in this lifetime. He said that so many times. So that was his instruction to us. Finish it up. Whether you think you're qualified or not, do it. In one lecture, Los Angeles, 1972, Prabhupada said, you do not want to come back in Kali Yuga. It's going to get horrible. Now, that was 1972. We're all in our 20s. Coming back for us means what? We're dying in the 2020s. So Prabhupada's talking about coming back in like 10 years from now. You know, he's saying, you don't want to come back. For us, coming back means 10, 20 years from now. So Prabhupada's saying, Kali Yuga is going to be horrible 10, 20 years from now. You don't want to come back. This is how he preached. Prabhupada used to say, you can see Krishna in this lifetime. You can go to Krishna in this lifetime and dance with him. Prabhupada said, I have the key to the back door. You're not qualified, but I have the key to the back door. Hold on to my dhoti. I'll get you in the back door. All these things. So, you know, if you go outside of ISKCON, they'll tell you, you can't do it in one life. It takes three lives. You have to do this and that. And I say, well, how do I know what life I'm in? Is it the first? Maybe I'm in the third life. But Prabhupada, he always said this lifetime. So that's how he trained us. So my suggestion to all of us is that should be our ambition. To be Krishna conscious, fully Krishna conscious in this lifetime, by the mercy of Prabhupada and all the Vaishnavas, we should think it's possible. Not by us, but by their mercy. That's what we should think. Otherwise, oh Prabhu, this lifetime, I'm so fallen. You don't know how fallen I am. I'm not going to make it back to God. What's the use of thinking like that? Just so you can feel good about how fallen you are? No. That's not service to Guru and Krishna. That's just a weak, dysfunctional psychology. That's all it is, basically. Right? Isn't it? Okay. We can stop. Well, okay. You don't have to stay, but we haven't heard the conch yet, so I guess we can go till we hear the conch.
Related to that question, how is it with this story when Narada Muni met this Gopala at the Brahmana? They said, can you ask Narayana how long they have to stay in material existence?
Right. So, because by the activities of the cobbler and by activities of the Brahman, he could see. And he knew their consciousness, and particularly he knew their consciousness. By if you're in the right consciousness, then Krishna knows, yeah. You've set yourself up by your proper consciousness to become completely Krishna conscious. Anyway, that's service to Prabhupada. How can I please you, Prabhupada? Read my books, become completely Krishna conscious. That's Prabhupada's answer. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi. Hari Hari Bhava.